This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
You guys, we're going to be looking at scripture this morning, the traveling psalms, Psalm 120 through 134. I guess call them the traveling psalms. They're really, in scriptures, are called the songs of ascent, meaning songs that pilgrims sang on their way to Jerusalem to worship. And so it's a metaphor, really, for our existence. We're on a trip, too, and we're on the way to worship. We're on our way to heaven. So these psalms are meaningful in that way. We're going to begin looking at Psalm 125, 126 today. They have a similar thing. We're going to combine them, and we're going to see what God has to say to us through these two psalms. I think we have to face something, that we live in a world of great insecurity. Many of the things that we used to take for granted, what we might have assumed were just absolutes, man, many of those things are gone. In a way, we're experiencing today a crisis of insecurity. Most people feel that their jobs, and you ask them, is your job secure? Is your retirement secure? A lot of people say, I'm not so sure about that. We have many parents today in our congregation, and you know that you sometimes worry about your children's futures, which seem less secure than they did a generation ago. Even our healthcare system, man, is insecure. And to top it off, the stability of godly values in America feels far less secure, and that means that everything depends upon moral values, man, that seems to be crumbling. And then the strain of these actual insecurities and the potential insecurities, they can produce this kind of undercurrent of apprehension, this undercurrent of disquiet. A lot of believers today, if they really are honest, they feel uneasy. They feel a little nervous because things seem so out of control. Well, you should know something, that though our lives are much different than the lives of Old Testament believers, I can tell you that the concerns of insecurity that we have today, man, that hasn't changed much for 3,000 years. And in fact, in Psalm 125 and 126, these psalms explore this theme of security and insecurity. And what happens, and what we should do, really, when the future looks a little grim, when life feels uncertain, and when the world seems to be spinning out of control a little bit. And together, these two psalms give us, they give believers a few things to do. And in fact, I've kind of boiled down what it says to do in three words, because, friends, the truth is, even if your world seems up for grabs right now, when you trust God, there is a way forward, always. So when life feels insecure, first remember to, and the first word that I want to give you out of three words is this, first remember to trust, knowing that God is your security on life's journey. Nothing else, no one else, only God himself. We've talked about this over the last few weeks. Let me read with you the first two verses of Psalm 125, and it says this, those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be shaken, but endures forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people both now and forevermore. The scepter of the wicked will not remain over the land allotted to the righteous, for then the righteous might use their hands to do evil. Essentially, what these verses say is that those who trust in the Lord are secure, okay? This is the most important reality of our lives. The mighty power and presence of God can overrule anything that might threaten us. So in him, we are secure. Now look at verse 1 here, because it gives us this beautiful simile. It says, believers, they're said to be like Mount Zion. Now Mount Zion, as you know, is the mountain upon which Jerusalem was built. So it was only about 2,500 feet high. That's not anything compared to Mount Rainier. But for them, that was high mountain. But even more important, man, Mount Zion represented God himself. Okay? And so Mount Zion was firmly in place. It was always going to be firmly in place. And so like Mount Zion, believers who trust in God, look what it says, will not be shaken. Now think about how, believers, how when we do not trust God, how we can be shaken as we walk through life. We can be shaken up emotionally. We can be shaken spiritually, where we back off from God because something bad is happening. We can allow difficult circumstances that are happening in our life to cause us to live in fear and apprehension. We can be psychologically shaken as well. When circumstances drive us and dictate what our spiritual state is and what our emotional state is, man, then we will be shaken. However, it says right here, when a believer trusts God, the psalmist tells us, that believer learns how to trust God, and that believer will then not be shaken up emotionally, shaken up spiritually, shaken up psychologically. When a believer places their confidence in God, they have peace of mind, and that peace of mind enables them to take a way forward. Now, by the way, that is one good way of thinking about what trust means. I've described trust in many ways over many years here, but one good way to think of this issue of trust is just placing confidence in God. Trust is placing our confidence in God instead of relying on ourselves, relying on our bank account, you just fill in the blank, whatever it is, institutions. Of course, you guys remember that as believers, you trusted God to begin a relationship with Jesus. Remember? I mean, you placed your confidence not in what you had done to save yourself. You placed your confidence in Jesus Christ. And when you did, he came into your life. You began a relationship with him. So you began your life in faith. But guys, every Christian must then continue to live by faith as long as we're walking on planet Earth, by continuing to trust God in everyday life. And the essence of trusting God through life's journey is placing our confidence in him. But trust, I'm not saying that trust is some sort of psychological certainty that everything is going to, you know, always turn out the way we want it. I mean, I'm not telling you to kind of produce some sort of, spiritual positive thinking, and that if you do, somehow everything will always work out so beautifully for you. Listen, this passage says that believers will not be shaken. It doesn't say we won't be tested. It doesn't say we won't be in pain. But when we place our confidence in God through every circumstance, we don't have to be ripped apart emotionally, ripped apart spiritually, where we push away from God. Verse 2 brings us to another image here of assurance. The Lord, it says, surrounds believers. Just like the mountains surround Jerusalem, the Lord surrounds his people. Now, look what it says. When does that happen? Does the Lord surround his people now and then? No, not now and then. It's now and forevermore. Meaning, guys, that God never takes his eyes off his kids. You're going to school, man? He's there with you. You're going to your work? He's there with you. You're hiking up Mount Rainier? He's going with you. Really, a lot of what it means to trust God is to know that he is walking with you and place your confidence in him in every circumstance. Now, I know that if we believers were more aware of God's attention and knew that he was in control and just were sensitive to the divine forces at his control, and we were willing in every circumstance to place our confidence in him, man, we would not fret so much. Yes, the threats of modern day life are mind-boggling, are they not? I mean, sometimes you just can't even take it all in. They're mind-boggling from the potential losses, the things that could happen. But believers, we do not have to act like frightened rabbits scurrying around with fear from one bit of bad news to the next. Why? Because if God, Mount Zion, if God is not shaken, then we are not shaken. If he is not shaken by something, we don't have to be shaken by it. God surrounds us and goes with us through each one of those events. And that means that our unshakable God is with us through good and through bad. Now, some of you are thinking, but Art, it's the bad I'm talking about. It's the bad I'm frightened about. Some of you might even say, even recently, my loved one did die. I don't have enough income. Half my retirement got blinked away by the latest, you know, downturn or whatever it was. Listen, the problem is that when believers think about God's best, they usually think about God's earthly best. God says here, man, it's not that you're going to be shielded from pain. It's that you can trust him for his best. But when you think of God's best, you always think of it, and I think of it, as God's earthly best, God's financial best, God's physical protection, the things that make me happy, you know, on planet Earth here. Guys, since God is so awesome, we do get a lot of those good things, do we not? Because we serve this awesome God who so many good gifts come our way. But when I say I can trust God for his best at all times, I mean I can trust him for what he considers to be my best. Does that make sense? And that's the reason that Job, in the book of Job, the book of Job is all about loss. It's all about grief. It's all about trust. And this is the reason that Job in Job 13 said this, though he slay me, yet I will hope in him. In other words, yeah, the bad thing can happen. In fact, even the worst bad thing that can happen. I'm going to die, and yet I continue to place my confidence in him. I will take God's perspective in life, his eternal perspective. Guys, if you've known me for very long, I'm kind of repetitive, you know. I say things over and over again. You probably only say things once, but I just get them in my mind. And if you've been my friend for very long, you've heard me say this thing I'm about to tell you. If something bad's happening in the economy, in the church, in individual lives, I'll say something like this. Well, man, wow, if God wasn't in charge, right, I'd be scared right now, okay? And I'm kind of trying to lighten the tone because that's what I do. But what I'm really saying is, yeah, if this thing is bad, of course it's bad. But if we're placing our confidence in God, then we don't have to be afraid in the middle of this thing. I can choose to see this thing with an eternal perspective. And I can then not have to be shaken. You see, trusting God does require an eternal perspective. In my view, scripturally, the Apostle Paul is the best example of someone with an eternal perspective found in the Scriptures. And the seminal passage that I always go back to see that perspective is 2 Corinthians 4, when he said this, therefore, we do not lose heart. In other words, meaning, therefore, I'm not going to be shaken. Therefore, I will not be shaken. Though outwardly we're wasting away, inwardly we're being renewed day by day. Our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. And what is seen is temporary. What is unseen is eternal. So an eternal perspective is seeing life from God's perspective. That's where we fix our eyes. The perspective is this, that what can be seen in this world, it's all temporary, all of it, and therefore of less importance. Not that it's not important, but it's of less importance. And what is unseen, that is the world to come, man, that is eternal and therefore of greater importance. So naturally, guys, the condition of our souls are a lot more important than the condition of our bodies, right? Therefore, what's happening internally is going to be of most importance. You know, Paul experienced, you know this story, he experienced massive pain in his life. He was stoned. He was beaten. He was falsely accused. He was brutally used. And yet, because of his trust in God, he was not shaken. You see it right here. Therefore, we do not lose heart. So it wasn't that he was closing his eyes and thinking, well, this isn't so bad. I mean, come on, he's getting stoned, you know. I mean, people are throwing rocks at him to try to kill him. He's not saying, oh, this isn't so bad. He's just saying, in every difficulty, I'm trying to see what God is doing, what he's trying to achieve in my life. Paul trusted God that whatever happened on his journey, good or bad, would be part of God's ultimate plan for his glory and for Paul's best. So we should not be shaken when difficult things happen. He's saying, because we keep an eternal perspective. I've been telling you this last several weeks about my friend John Stumbo. And John, and I'm kind of almost using him as an example all the way through this series. But you know now that in 2008, he went from being a healthy guy in his late 40s to a guy in a wheelchair and a feeding tube. And so it was a massive reversal. And he spent 2 years that way. And one of the things that he says about that process he went through was that he really had to fight a lie, one lie that kept coming back over and over again. The lie was this: you're never going to get out of this. Your present situation is your permanent situation. This is as good as it's going to get. And so here's John in a wheelchair on a feeding tube fighting this thought: this is as good as it's going to get. Now, what John did, because he's a man of faith, he is eventually saw the fallacy of that thinking. And he realized, no, in fact, he wasn't stuck there, because after all, even if God didn't see fit to change the situation, he could always change John, okay? If God continued to allow John's illness to take its toll, then God was saying to John, man, no, my best for you is for you to be here in the midst of this illness and allow me to make the changes necessary in your heart that will be eternal changes. Guys, in other words, no matter what is happening in the here and now, all things eventually will conform to God's will, eventually. So Paul was taking an eternal perspective, and that perspective was this: our light and momentary troubles on planet Earth are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. That is, God can cause whatever's going on to be used for his best. So friends, even if your world seems up for grabs, man, when you trust God, there is a way forward every time. Now, verse 3 comes, and it helps deepen this idea by claiming something. Look what it says: the scepter of the wicked will not remain over the land allotted to the righteous. So a scepter was a staff or baton which represented the authority of that ruler. So when the psalmist says here, the scepter of the wicked will not remain over the land, he's just saying, listen, Israel is not going to remain under the rule of evil nations permanently. In other words, God is going to work out his plan, his ultimate plan for Israel. That's going to be established. In other words, God would overrule any evil that was there and not allow that authority to drive his people in the wrong direction. So even in the midst of difficult situations, believers could trust that God was at work in the ultimate way. Now, if you apply this to believers today, that's you and me, you might understand the scepter of the wicked almost to be Satan and his evil kingdom. Yes, Satan is at work. Yes, bad things can happen because of evil, but because you were a part of God's kingdom, you don't live under that rule, man. And God certainly is not going to allow that rule to take you someplace he doesn't want you to be. In other words, no matter what is happening now, in the end, all things conform to God's will. Now, friends, if you feel insecure in some way right now, remember to trust the only one who can bring security in life. Those who trust the Lord will not be shaken. But that's only the first word, man. We got two other words in this passage. And the second word is simply this: pray. If you feel insecure, remember to pray, knowing that life's battles are won in dependence upon God. This is demonstrated both in Psalm 125 and in Psalm 126, because that's just the natural outcome if you trust God. If you trust God, you just naturally go back to him in prayer over and over again. Read with me these verses, first of all, from Psalm 125, then 126. Do good, O Lord, to those who are good, to those who are upright in heart. And then in Psalm 126, restore our fortunes, O Lord, like the streams in the Negev. Those who sow in tears will reap with songs of joy. He who goes out weeping, carrying seed to sow, will return with songs of joy, carrying sheaves with him. Friends, we have this wonderful promise in Psalm 125 that believers will not be shaken, that God surrounds us. But the promises of God will never meant to eliminate the need for prayer. Life's battles are always won in dependence upon God. They're always won on our knees. And that dependence is actively pursued in prayer. That's where we go to find strength, help, hope. So in the midst of difficulties, prayer is the place that we express trust. So the promise at the beginning of Psalm 125, they're now followed by the pilgrim's prayer, okay? Now look what the psalmist is praying for in each of these psalms. Psalm 125, do good, O Lord, to those who are good, those who are upright in heart. Now how's that for being bold? That's a pretty bold prayer. Guys, one of the things that the book of Job shows us over and over, one of the truths you found in the book of Job, is that our current difficult circumstance does not negate God's desire to listen and to answer our prayers. Whatever's going on right now, this psalmist is saying, Lord, do good. You're a good God. You love us, so do good to us. Now, not because we're so good, that is, we earn your response to us. Notice that he says here that you can be good to those who are upright in heart. Upright in heart, that word upright comes from a Hebrew word that means straight or direct. So those who are upright in heart are the straight shooters. Man, they've given their heart to the Lord without reservation. They're not serving God one day and then not serving God the next day. So the psalmist is saying, really, man, come on, we have a vital relationship with you, with you, God. You then enable us to do good. So we trust you, God. We look to you to do what is ever necessary to bring goodness, your goodness, into our life. Now, Psalm 126, you know, that's a pretty bold prayer. Psalm 126 is also bold. Restore our fortunes like streams in the Negev. Guys, we're going to talk about this in the next point, but the situation in Israel this time was not good. They had come back from exile. Some of you don't know the history of Israel and Judah. That's okay, but Israel and Judah, because of their evil ways, they got sent into captivity to Babylon. Well, they returned from Babylon to find a pretty wrecked environment. I mean, the land had lay fallow for 70 years. Jerusalem's walls, Jerusalem's temple, totally ruined. So good things were happening. That is, they were back, right? They were brought back, but there was so much to be done. So, I don't know, have you ever been there thinking, well, God, okay, I can see a few things you're doing, but so much more has to be done? You've been there? I think most of us have. Well, a lot of restoration was needed for things to come even close to normal in Israel. So this psalmist says, Lord, restore us. Now, naturally, restoration was going to happen one step at a time, but man, at some point, that restoration would be a reality. And that's the reason why he uses this phrase, like streams in the Negev. The Negev he was talking about was the desert to the south of Judah. And what would happen in the springs in the Negev was that the spring rains would come, and those rains would wash down those gullies of that area, and almost overnight, the wasteland would be transformed into a flower garden. And so this image is so beautiful. It says, Lord, I'm praying for restoration. And I want it to be like streams in the Negev. I know it'll happen one step at a time, perhaps. But eventually, that restoration will happen. We relate to these prayers, guys, because though we may appreciate what God has done already, I hope we have, we also many, many times see how far we have to go. We see the difficult realities that remain. We see how dark the situation maybe still is, even though some progress has been made. So we echo this psalmist, restore our fortunes, Lord, like streams in the Negev. We too have got to understand something. Life's battles are won in dependence upon God. This doesn't mean that we substitute prayer for action or shirk our responsibilities. It means that we refuse to trust in ourselves or in our own actions. We come boldly to seek God's intervention because we know that ultimately He is the one who turns wasteland into flower garden. It's only Him. And that's the only way it will go. You know, at the end of 2009 at Lighthouse, the leadership team asked one of our members, Gary Sicani, to go to the city and get for us a conditional use permit because we wanted to build, you know, we wanted to do all kinds of work on this property and eventually even build a building. And we thought, oh, great, we were pretty optimistic. That's going to take 4 or 5 months. That's going to be good. Well, it took us over a year to obtain that conditional use permit. And it was just one problem after another, one bureaucratic technicality after another. Do not get me started on that. And I want you to know that as skilled as my friend Gary was and is in those matters, I didn't turn to Gary when the CUP looked iffy. I trusted God to obtain the CUP, and I trusted Gary to cooperate with God and to pursue the things that he needed to do. So I did trust him, but I didn't trust him for the ultimate job. So time after time during that process, I would just go to the Lord and say, okay, Father, here it is again. You're going to have to give us favor, and only you can do it. Thank you, Lord. And then ultimately, we did get it. See, that reliance on God, that's also true of my personal life. I will tell you that incident after incident after incident of my life, that I know where to go for life's battles. Many of you know that when my son John had lymphoma 10 years ago, we appreciated the doctor's skills. Sure we did. We appreciated good care, good medicine. Dr. Sinicol was our doctor. He's in the area here. He's a great cancer doc. But the moment we exited the doctor's offices, we're in our car joining hands saying, Lord, we commit this process to you. You're the one who will bring John through this thing. So we depend upon you. Use, Lord, whatever you want to use, but we trust you. Essentially, here's what we're praying. Lord, restore John's fortunes like streams in the Negev. Because you're the only one who can take it from wasteland to flower garden. You're the only one who can do it. Man, and that's where we continue to go week after week and month after month. And some of you are still there right in the middle. We went to the Lord, though. Why? Because life's battles are won in dependence upon God. So as much as we appreciated Dr. Sinicol, we didn't put our hope in him. We didn't put our hope in medicine, but in God. And guys, just over and over again, we brought our expression of confidence in God. Now, the psalmist finishes with a metaphor of harvest because he wants to encourage prayer. Look what he says. Those who sow in tears will reap with songs of joy. He who goes out weeping, carrying seeds to sow, will return with songs of joy, carrying sheaves with him. So in farming, guys, the joys of harvest are always won with hard work, right? If some of you have a farming background, you know this. Think about all the work involved in sowing. But now, think about how much work there is in sowing for these pilgrims. Because they're coming back to land, not rich land with beautiful furrows in it, right? And all they have to do is throw out a few seeds. They are coming to a land that's difficult. They're going to have to prepare it. In other words, they're going to have to sow in tears. Does that make sense? That means they're going to have to put a lot of work into sowing, a lot of hard hours. Now, however, think of the joy of harvest. The harvest always exceeds the quantity of seed sown. So you get a little bag of seed, that's going to yield many sheaves of grain. So this harvest would be amazing, full of joy, and so the farmers would be returning with songs of joy, carrying sheaves with them. Now, why all this talk about sowing and reaping here when we're talking about when he's praying? The psalmist is using this metaphor to say, look how God works in nature. Look how he does it. God has set up a system in nature where the pain of sowing is followed by the joy of harvest. So we're encouraged to pray now in the depth of our pain, when our lives are parched, when it's difficult, and trust God that a joyful harvest will be the ultimate end. So we will pray, because we know, man, yeah, we're going to be sowing in tears sometimes, believing that one day we'll reap with joy, but we know that life's battles are always won in dependence upon God. Now, so when you feel life feels secure, man, you trust. When life feels insecure, man, you pray. But number three, and this is very brief, number three, rejoice, knowing that ultimate solutions often start with small beginnings. Look what it says at the beginning of Psalm 126. When the Lord brought back the captives to Zion, we were like men who dreamed. Our mouths were filled with laughter, our tongues with songs of joy. And then when it said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them, the Lord has done great things for us, and we were filled with joy. Guys, have you ever wanted something so bad that when you got it, it almost felt like a dream? Anybody like that? I think maybe my wedding day was like that, and there are probably some other days like that. But man, it felt like a dream. Well, that's what these guys are saying here in these first verses. These guys are pilgrims, and they're coming to Jerusalem, and now they're remembering the day when they came back from exile from Babylon. And what happened? Man, worship got reestablished, and Judah was allowed in Babylon to come back to Jerusalem. That is, part of Judah was. And there was a king, his name was Cyrus, and he wasn't a believer, but God turned his heart. And Cyrus allowed those Jews to come back, and he even contributed to the rebuilding project. So God was the one who worked that out. Now, for these pilgrims, coming back to Jerusalem was a dream come true, a huge reversal of a very harsh reality. So they've arrived on their pilgrim journey, and now they're remembering back. Remember how it was when we first came back to Jerusalem? Remember that, pilgrims? It was like a dream come true. So these pilgrims are rejoicing at the beginning of the solution that they were seeking. There's two things I want you to see about what they say here. First, whatever current distress that you are experiencing, it is not an argument against God's power or grace or mercy or love for you. Sometimes people say, well, if God isn't rescuing me right now, well, then maybe he doesn't love me. Sometimes we feel like the psalmist in Psalm 77 who said, will the Lord reject me forever? I mean, has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Yes, you guys, these pilgrims had a difficult time in the past, but they didn't mean that God couldn't be relied upon to reverse a painful present. Just like my friend John Stumbo, John, at a point in time, God spoke to him, John, I'm going to do something in your body. John placed his faith and trust in what God was saying to him. He cooperated with that. He sought the healing, and he found healing. And now he's out of his wheelchair and off a feeding tube, man. So first of all, don't give up on God or what God will do simply because the present situation doesn't look very good. But number two, we are also to take joy in small beginnings and small answers to prayer. Verse 2 says that it's very clear that to the other nations at that time that the Lord had done great things for them. So look what the psalmist says here. He says, oh, it's so clear to the other nations, God has done great things. Well, think about the reality of what had happened. A small little remnant of people had come back to Jerusalem. They'd come back to a land that was choked with weeds and full of wild animals, and in which Jerusalem's walls were broken down and the temple was a heap of ashes. And anything they were doing to fix it, man, was getting hurt. And yet they could say in verse 3, the Lord has done great things for us. We are filled with joy. In other words, they took joy at the beginning of the process. They took joy at whatever step God had for them in the process. They might have said, well, if God hasn't finished this yet, we can't give thanks to God now. I mean, come on, let's not get happy until the thing's really all done. Guys, no way. Okay, the temple didn't have much glory at that time. But that doesn't mean God wasn't at work. Friends, let's not wait to express joy and praise to God in our difficult situation until the whole deal is fixed. Find a place of praise when there's a small step, when God supplies for that day, when a small breakthrough occurs, when you're still breathing at the end of the day, okay? That's it. Take joy. You know, I had lunch with a friend of mine. His name is Ted, and he has a very severe chronic cancer, and he has for a couple of years now. And I had lunch with him this week, and at the beginning of the lunch, he was apologizing to me because he was hiccuping. He said, you know, after chemotherapy, I hiccup, and I have to take medicine, but the medicine's out in the car. And so we said, well, let's just pray. And he said, okay, I'll kind of hold my breath a little bit. Maybe that'll do. And you just pray. So we're in the restaurant, and I'm just got my hands out, you know, oh, hey, Lord, you know. And truth be known, you should know this. I might as well tell you now. I'm speaking in a prayer language, okay? I'm going to speak about 1 Corinthians in the fall, so you'll figure out what that is in a minute. So I was just praying for my friend Ted. And then in about a minute, we open our eyes, and then Ted says this. He says, wow, Art, isn't God good? My hiccups are gone. Now, there's Ted, who without intervention is dying, and he's saying, look what God has done for me. My hiccups are gone. Okay, guys, come on. It is right to honor God, but also, man, remember that often small answers to prayer are just one more step in the ultimate restoration. And there's always hope in that way. Believers, when life feels insecure, here's what we remember. Trust, pray, rejoice. We don't close our eyes to realities, but we reach our hand out to God. Even if our world seems up for grabs, when you trust God, there's a way forward. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be shaken, but which endures forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people both now and forevermore. Let's pray. Father, I'm reminded today of how many of your people are enduring some painful situation. Those who face illness or unemployment or painful loss or ongoing difficulty of some kind. And Father, would you realign our hearts and help us to get an eternal perspective and choose to rely on you and place our confidence in you. Would you help each one of us who faces insecurity to reach out to you in prayer and take joy in small victories? And would you use your word today, Lord, to encourage your people?
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-848-2028.